CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. We're here. We're live. It's Wednesday, the 30th of November, and I'm holding up a picture of today's newspaper as a selfie to prove to you that we are actually here and these things are actually happening to you. Because there's so much fake news in the world these days, you never know what's true anymore, right? Nobody knows what's true. You know, you'd kind of think that the mainstream media would be doing a little bit more work trying to establish their own credibility rather than to erode it every day. But, you know, organizations like CNN and, you know, Huffington Post and things like that, they're just doing themselves no favors. Like, they keep walking into walls. And their credibility is hanging by a thread at the moment, and yet they will perpetuate ideology over news, and they wonder why they're losing. They wonder why that they're losing audiences. They wonder why they're not making it into kind of mainstream culture anymore, why they follow mainstream culture. Mainstream culture leads, and the news is almost a subsidiary of that. And it never used to be that way. And I thought about it the other day. I thought, you know what, the main problem is that people actually don't read. People don't read at all. And that's not entirely people's fault. The reason people don't read is because we've only really been reading as humans for probably, let's be as generous as possible, 500 years. I mean, ordinary people. And in some places, less than that. In some places, about 150 years. Okay. Now, reading is not a natural part of our evolved means of gathering and taking in information. It's certainly a good one, but it's not the most natural. The most natural one is? Anybody? Talking? Listening. Listening. We've been listening forever. That's how we always gained information about our environment. First and foremost, if you heard a rumble in the jungle, you started running the fuck out of your legs so you could get away from whatever the rumble was. But reading is something very new to humans. And it's ironic that we consider reading is the first place to go and gain knowledge, when actually the first place to go and gain knowledge is listening, and that's why I think podcasts are the future. Yeah, to tie it all into a tiny little package. I mean, we've been reading for 500 years, but we've been listening forever. So let's get into this. This is where we share information, we share stories, we talk to each other. I had the most interesting... maybe I should read this. Normally I wouldn't. It's kind of boring, and I've just knocked reading as the primary form of communication. But I had the most interesting debate yesterday with someone who wrote to me. Nobile is a regular listener who often sends me emails, and you know, we like to disagree with each other. And Nobile had the following to say: Gareth, as always, love the show and enjoy your biased mindset and narrow-minded views. At least you're educated in your point of view. So I said, in reply, you must choose, either I'm educated or I'm narrow-minded. But in my humble opinion, I'm always willing to learn as much that will change my point of view in the light of better evidence, so surely I can't be both. You can't be narrow-minded and educated.
Well,
or is it possible to be both?
You can kind of be educated, but you're just unwilling to sway on certain things. Oh, definitely not. That's not you.
I don't know. I mean, I'm more than willing to change my point of view about a lot.
No, exactly, you are.
Look, you are so wrong about Fidel Castro, says Mobile, and I'll present you with facts as to why he's a hero and why Tony Blair and George Bush are war criminals. Firstly, though, I do have to admit he was a tyrant and ruthless ruler, but you're only focusing on that and ignoring how the glorious West also suppresses people, i.e. Snowden. So I said, you know, I support Snowden and Assange, free expression and all that. There's one more reason I disliked Crooked Hillary. Because she was very much opposed to those people. Now let's look at Cuba's pre-revolution. This is now Mobile talking. It was heavily dependent on the U.S. economically. Crime was rampant, and the U.S. Owned the black market, hence the rise in crime, heavily corrupt government officials. The wealth gap was huge between poor and the upper class. That's all true, no contest. The pattern here is that the U.S. is making Cuba its slave, and the majority were not getting what the few were. Enter Fidel. Yes, that was a kind of colonialism and imperialism, I said, but compare the situation with Puerto Rico or Dominican Republic, and who comes out looking better? Because those countries are pretty normalized and modernized, and, you know, they have a place in the modern world. And then he says, yeah, he changed it, but more people got educated, free schooling up to PhD level. Fees Must Fall movement would ejaculate at this. So I said, yeah, Hitler's Germany also produced the greatest scientists of the mid-20th century. That doesn't help your moral argument in the least. So he says, under Fidel, who's getting buried today, I think, the education level was raised. Before 1959, the literacy rate was 60 to 76%. After it was raised to 96. You realize, even before Castro, we have a lower educated literacy rate in South Africa right now, in 2016? Isn't that depressing? And he raised it to 96. Now, I ask you, is this a sign of a bad leader? He started a very ambitious literacy program in 1961, which created a culture of learned people in their country. Good point, Mobile. And people bring this up all the time about Castro and Cuba. And they also bring this up about the Soviet Union. But what did those people do once they had all this education? They tried to get out, or they ended up stifled in a job that they didn't want or get rewarded properly for. There is no excellence in Cuba. Cuba's invented nothing. There's no innovation. And despite all these great literacy levels, doesn't it strike you as odd? Don't you think that's strange? If you have 96% literacy, you'd have a couple of geniuses coming out of there, right?
But is it not part of the whole tyrannical ploy that make your people educated towards a certain system and they stay loyal to it? I mean, Zimbabwe's education system is better than ours, right, isn't it?
No, that's one of those myths. I don't know that there's empirical evidence to show that.
Because people always talk about that, the fact that Bob at least gets people educated, but no, educated to what?
It's ideology. If you live in a Marxist socialist society, there is no excellence because everybody's constantly being forced to flatten the curve. Yeah. So no one can ever be good or bad. They all have to be average, which means mediocrity, which means nobody really does anything. Humanity, civilization doesn't advance. And this is the point with something like Cuba. People don't like to acknowledge this, but there were no Nobel Prizes, no new technology, no exports that aren't raw materials or hand-rolled cigars. So what benefit does that high literacy rate do for Cuba or any other country where everybody's always striving to be equal in terms of outcome?
Zero.
Right?
Yeah.
So he says, Cuban education is still rated in this world better than your precious U.S. So I said, I'm not precious about the U.S. The U.S. is just free. Cubans are not free. They're still not free. Unemployment rate in Cuba, he says, 3.3%. The U.S. at 6.3%. Well, Cuba has a tiny population, and it's an island. Plus, you don't get to choose your job in Cuba, remember? The government chooses your job for you. Have you forgotten how communism works? Such lucky Cubans. So, of course you have an employment rate of 3% because they need someone to dig a hole. They say to you whether you've got a medical degree or whether you're an engineer or whether you're just a laborer, dig a hole.
Yeah,
then you're employed.
If your employment rate's not so good within communism, then you've failed at communism.
Well, everybody's failed at communism. There isn't a working example where you can show success. Google was founded in Cuba, of course. We know that, right?
Really?
No, of course not. The U.S. education system versus the Cuban system, and the U.S. failed as the Cubans outperformed them. Well, that's not true, Mobile. That's just not true. And I've still got to get a reply out of Mobile for this, because people don't – there's no fact here. It's all ideology. So great business ideas from the last 20 years have come out of Cuba, right? No. Obviously not. What have they got? They have to – listen, they can send doctors – and they can send lawyers, average doctors and average lawyers, to other parts of the world who need doctors and lawyers, like us, because we don't produce enough good doctors and lawyers, right?
Yeah.
Not enough.
Sure.
So that's not a certification of achievement. That just means that you've now reached capacity. Like everybody in Cuba has access to free basic health care. And that is an achievement of a kind. But it certainly doesn't show you any kind of recipe for success. And then all you do is those people, unless they stay in Cuba and they end up digging holes or, you know, building a bridge or something that a doctoral degree does nothing for you in, they have to go to South Africa where they get employed in our public healthcare system, because anyone with a brain has either left the country already in terms of someone in medicine, or they're working in private healthcare. Or they're doing one of those internships, you know, or trying to make a difference. Maybe they're just a good person. But there are few and far between of those. So Anyway, he says, this is education alone, Gareth, and it was highly improved by Fidel, like it or not. Now, thanks to the U.S. and heavy influence, it has painted Fidel in a negative light, and the economic embargo is the main reason they're still stuck in the 60s with most of their infrastructure. So I said, you've said this. That's your only positive so far. I'm waiting for another one. So he says, Cuban health also improved post-1959. There is so much he has done with such a great example to follow. Even Huffington Post indirectly appreciated. Well, how much credibility do they have?
Yeah.
By acknowledging the Cuban system's work and they're exported to other countries, here in South Africa as an example. We've just dealt with that. And again, why would people risk their lives to leave this healthy paradise for filthy Miami? Just answer that. That's, in fact, forget about all my other arguments. Just tell me why people keep trying to get out of Cuba if it's so great. And there's free education and free healthcare. Because people don't care about free stuff. The minute something's free, there's no value attached to it. Your arguments all fall down, I said to him, when you're focused to explain, and why, when you're forced rather to explain why so many people flee Cuba in anything that floats when there's no traffic the other way. Explain that. As to why you blatantly ignore the facts, I don't understand, or maybe it just goes according to your narrative, and the more free market learning, hence you think Fidel's a bad guy. So I said, look, and here's some, let's talk about this on the day we bury this man. I don't believe in heroes, and I don't believe in saints. No human being is. So I said this. He ran death squads. He pursued and killed dissenters. He coddled a destructive relationship with the Soviet Union that almost brought on World War III. He was in power from 1959 until he became a drooling old vegetable. Like any other dictator, he had to die for someone else to get into power. And his brother took over when he became comatose. Because it's a family business exploiting a whole country. Look up 13 de Marzo. You know what that is. That was a tugboat full of children that he killed who were trying to flee Cuba. Children! How does that strike your thoroughly sensitive and beating heart? There's a song sung in Spanish by this group called the Sandpipers. It's called Cuando Salí de Cuba, which in English means When Can I Return to Cuba? It's very poignant. The collapse of the Soviet Union, cutting off of aid, further exacerbated Cuba's primitive economy. He tried to export revolution to Central and South America, which consequently led to the death of Che Guevara as his right-hand man. Many Cuban women lost their husbands and nephews when Fidel sent Cuban soldiers to assist the socialist Angolan government in UNITA, led by Jonas Savimbi and South African forces. South Africa was still under apartheid then. Whether Cuba will introduce a market economy remains to be seen, but Fidel Castro is not a leader to be admired, even though Justin Trudeau of Canada seems to think he is. The CIA had tried to eliminate him for many years. They came up with all sorts of bizarre schemes, which he survived over and over again. So for a lot of people, he's a hero because of that. I'll give you that much. Like, they tried to get the hair in his beard to fall out, so he'd be less macho. But what part of this isn't a fact? What part of it are you choosing to ignore so that you can fulfill your subjective narrative of him coming to the aid of Savimbi in Angola? Do you really think he cared about South Africa, Fidel Castro? How much time did he actually spend here after we were free? One. I think he came for Mandela's inauguration. That's it. He didn't really care about us. We were just one of the tools he employed in allying himself with the enemies of his enemy, America, in a Cold War that he and his friends lost. So you make us way more important than we are in his story. We're not important to him. He didn't care about us. The death of Castro is the death of the final living example of the failure of communism. He was an anachronism in every single way. We are best rid of him. Anyway, so that was an argument I had yesterday. I felt like having an argument with someone who's smart. He's a smart guy. I don't think he's an idiot. So I thought, let's have a proper conversation about this. And I've spent 8 minutes telling you about it. So, but you know what? Rest in peace, Fidel. It's certainly not something you created during your life. Good morning, Ben. Morning, Mubs. Morning, Flex. It was almost like a soliloquy. What's going on? Everybody okay? How's the day going? Anything to say? Anything on your mind? Anything you want to talk about? Well, look at that. I don't know why you guys bothered coming today.
I wanted to ask...
Do you want to go home? I can fucking run things. It's okay. Anybody?
Oh, calm the fuck down.
I'm very calm.
Well, then why are you asking us if we want to go home?
Oh, you don't know. Do you want to say anything?
Well, I mean, Flex is talking, so just calm the fuck down. Flex?
I heard that Fidel Castro was, like, the most filthy rich. Like, who was that? I watched his, he's got that series out, Pablo Escobar?
Yeah, yeah,
I heard he was even richer than that dude. Is that true?
No.
I don't think so. I don't think he was much into material shows of wealth. That's also, one thing. He lived his own philosophy. That's probably likely.
He didn't have, like, crazy resources to create great wealth from, like, drugs or petrol or gold or anything like that.
Yeah.
Sorry, oil.
I'm going to try to pull up that article where it spoke about his butler saying that he was just filthy, filthy rich. Maybe it's a false statement, but...
I don't know. As I said at the beginning of the show this morning, so much fake news out there. You don't know what's true anymore.
Mm.
And these days, it doesn't matter if it's true or not. People will publish it anyway. By the way, I got this half-hearted apology from the Sunday Times yesterday. It was like, we're sorry, but blah, blah, blah. So, the fight continues.
Was it published?
No.
How is there
a
but?
They just sent our lawyer a letter. Well, they're not apologizing for everything. They want to kind of have this, but they want to keep that. And I should shut up about it until it's all sorted out. It's just driving me crazy.
People can just never ever admit they're wrong or anything like that.
Listen to this.
The fiber.
Yeah, no, totally. Here's an interesting email. This is just fantastic. You know, we set up hashtag invest with Anthea Gardner a while ago, which is going very nicely. And if you'd like to know more, you can find out more in the Money Shot page on cliffcentral.com. And I know it's a bit of a process to get yourself FECA'd and everything else, but you open the gate to yourself becoming an investor on the stock market. And to perhaps your kids, your nephews, your friends, your family, whoever it is that you want to get into the stock market. You know, again, I'll raise the example. There's that old joke of the guy who he sits at home and he's miserable and his life is horrible and he's got no money and things are not working for him. And he prays, he says to God, God, I really need to win the lottery. And he prays and prays and prays and he prays really hard. And the lottery comes on that night and he's sitting there and he's praying and he's praying and he's praying. He's like, oh God, please let me win this lottery. And the lottery numbers come up, and it's a 16, and a 32, and a 5, and a 9, and a 38. And he goes, oh, God, I didn't get one number. God, I've been praying so hard. And God says, the least you could have done is buy a ticket. Meet me halfway. You know? So if you want to improve your financial well-being, you have to take the steps that start making that happen. And if it's 100 bucks a month, if it's 50 rand a month, if it's 5 rand a month that you save up until you're ready to get into things, until you've got some kind of capital stored up. Because we all live from hand to mouth. And I get that. Like, things are expensive. But I know so many people have smartphones. They eat fast food. They do a lot of things that were not possible for anyone 20 years ago. Right, and they spend a shitload of money on this stuff, but they don't think about tomorrow, and they don't plan for the future, and then they wonder why they're poor when they're in their pension, you know, their octogenarian old age. So here's where you can start. You can start by just saving up a bit of money, and I'm not going to tell you how to spend that money, but one of the ways to do it is to get into invest. So we get this email yesterday. Hiya, I am a host parent on weekends for a child from my local orphanage. I'd like to sign up to hashtag invest for him so that when he leaves the orphanage, when he turns 18, he'll have a few rands available. Or if he chooses, obviously he can just keep the investment going. He's currently 13 years old and I'm not his parent or legal guardian. I would set up a monthly debit order from my account. What paperwork or documentation would I need to make such an investment possible for him?
Sure.
Isn't that nice?
You know, there really are some good people in this world.
I love that. Made my whole day yesterday.
I just think it's the way forward for anything around spending money on people under the age of 18. Because no matter what you buy them or do, it's just a waste. This is the only way.
It's one way. There are lots of ways. I mean,
the investment process. I mean,
sure, you could have. There used to be people who had post office accounts and pensioners. By the way, I mean, what a lease on life this will give some old people to look at the stock market every day rather than just reading the obituaries. There's a story about a 92-year-old guy who is on the hashtag invest platform. Well, he's on Easy Equities. He started at 92 with a little share portfolio, and he's obsessed now. Every day he goes on, he checks how much more or less his portfolio is worth. He changes his shares. He swaps this one for that one. He sells on this company, buys on that one. He's having the time of his life. He's keeping his brain going. Instead of just sitting around and looking at these numbers, which come at you anyway all day. Mm. You hear it on the radio. You see it on TV. It's all over the internet. These numbers are thrown at you. And you could be a part of that. You could be part of the game instead of just being an observer and complaining one day when, you know, this person and that person are rich because they invested and you didn't.
It's also a great way of having an active stake in the news. You think, like, certain things happen, markets get influenced. Mm. Rather than just going, ugh, this bloody world, you go, oh, well, that's going to totally work for my shares.
Right. Well, listen to this quickly. Here's a couple of messages on my my Cuban rant. Ashley says, everybody's mourning this dictator, but the Cubans in Miami are partying in the streets. That tells me everything I need to know.
True.
A Homer from the Renegade Report, who never misses a chance to have a say. And by the way, the Renegade Report this week is fantastic because it doesn't include a guest. It's just the two of them. Just Homer and Jonathan Witt. Just talking it out, duking it out over the year 2016. So I would suggest you go and take a listen to that. Why are people, says Roman, so obsessed with outcomes in Cuba? The average salary is $20 a month, and millions have fled. That's all you need to know. Education within a prison still means you're imprisoned. It's ridiculous. Well, listen, I'd love to know what the counter argument is to that. I mean, our president left an NEC meeting where they were discussing his future to be present at this idiot's funeral. And you've got to ask yourself, why? What symbolically, that's insanity. Just because he helped once. We're living in, we spend a lot of time in this country living in the past. Really, we spend an inordinate amount of time living in the past. And there's something about that that's very unhealthy.
It's completely.
It means you've got baggage that you still got to deal with, right? And if you're constantly living in the past, you've got to ask yourself, how do I deal with that so I can move forward? You cannot move forward and backward at the same time. You end up in the same place. It makes perfect logical sense. I do not understand this. But our president is there. He's in Cuba now. There's a bunch of other failed socialists that have all gathered there. There are people like Justin Trudeau in Canada who's putting out eulogies that praise this guy. They're stuck in the past. They're hoping that there'll be some example in the future of functional Marxism. It's still yet to happen. And how many more people must die?
Well, Gareth, I think you've laid your case bare. This is it. See, the problem with counter-arguments is that it's mostly based on feelings, but there's no actual stats or anything like that to come back at this. There's no facts around that.
Right. Well, I'm not going to say I'm right or wrong. Let you decide that. If you come up with a better argument, bring it. I'm more than happy to hear it. Please. It's not important to me to be right. What's important here is that we have the conversation that matters.
I think it's important that we stop wasting time, like you say, on this useless ideology about trying to immortalize figures that don't deserve it. We've been doing it for like centuries already.
Hugo says, that's right, Mubs. Put Gareth in his place. He seems to be angry this morning. I promise you I'm not angry. I get passionate about things and people mistake that for anger. I've got to work on how I deliver that in terms of tone. That's my fault.
I wasn't doing anything. I was responding. I mean, fuck.
Hugo says, enough Castro for this morning, guys. The MTN free streaming. Is it Cliff Central or Touch Central that's free to stream? Well, at the moment, it's just Touch Central, I'm led to believe. I've asked 1,000 questions, and what they've told me is that it's Touch Central free streaming on the Touch Central app, which is absolutely guaranteed for the moment, and we're going to work on that for the whole of next year as well. But certainly, until January, you can listen for free on MTN on the Touch Central app. If you're not on MTN, obviously, it's going to cost you what it always did before. But I'm talking to people who are willing to pay for good content. Even though you're not paying me for it, you're paying the networks. I'm okay with that, as long as we're both sharing in a good conversation. Then Inati says, speaking about reading, I got your book yesterday. I slept this morning at 1 a.m. reading. Fantastic book. Well, thanks, Inati. Masimula from Rennstown, Hammanskraal. I've been wondering if I could intern for you guys. I'm a young presenter. I want to be a radio DJ, model, entrepreneur, and a mass communication student at UNISA. That's a lot of things. Doing a lot of things there. Masimula, good for you. That's Tabo, sorry. Tabo Masimula. All right, well, you know what? We do have gaps occasionally, so email us your CV. We'll see if we can slot you in at some point. We do try our best to bring in people, talented people, young people especially, give them a chance to do their thing. All right, when we come back in a moment, we will get to the news with Mubs, we'll get to the sport with Ben, and we'll get to the money with Anthea. That's all on the way. It's MIA featuring Zane. Time for us to check in on some news. See what's going on. The news brought to you by Colcacchio Pizzeria. Here is Mabane Monoi. Go with the long techno intro for this morning.
That's all right.
Don't forget, at Colcacchio Pizzeria, you can get the finest pizzas made the proper way. They never, ever let you down. And don't forget, they're going to be opening a new store in Eastgate soon. Keep an eye out on their Facebook page for information on when. If you love a brand, you've got to like them on Facebook, so go along and take a look at what they've got. They'll keep you updated with all their specials. They'll keep you updated with all their special celebrity pizzas. So, you know, they've got those celebrity chef series pizzas, which are terrific. And you can go and see what's up over there as well. All right, what's in the news?
Well, the 2016 matric exams have officially come to an end, which means parents all over now enter a very tense phase of worrying about their kids' promiscuity and just how drunk they're going to get. Some, you know, lucky ones will...
Matric rage. Yeah. Woo!
The lucky ones will go on their gap year next year. But a lot of the matrics will really be concerned and focused about getting into a tertiary institution next year, because that is really the next phase of their lives, isn't it?
Hmm.
Getting into a tertiary institution.
And as Mubs and I learned, it's not about getting in, it's about staying in. It's difficult.
You know, sometimes the institution puts you on on academic probation, and then they decide whether or not they want you there, and then they either ask you to leave or they give you another chance. It's you know, it's not always easy staying in a tertiary institution. Of course, the common story in this country is that a lot of students struggle financially to even stay in a tertiary institution. So that will be on the, you know, the grade 12 pupils agenda next is next year. What happens next year?
Flax, you have such a tertiary degree, and you made it through. And do you miss any of it now that you're in the working world?
I miss the fact that I didn't take a gap year. I'm quite a promoter of a gap year.
Oh, okay, why?
I wasn't allowed to take a gap year. I just think that you really find yourself in a gap year. You find out exactly who you are and what you want to do.
Okay.
You also, you get that whole manual labor thing. Like, on your gap year, you'll go work across the world. You'll see places you never got to see. I mean, when you start a job, you get 20 days leave. That's it. Yeah. When you're on a gap year, you basically control your own life for a year.
I think that's probably got some merit.
I don't think there's enough push on parents to let their kids take a gap year.
Well, it's also, for some people, it's just not affordable.
Yeah, I'm not saying that pay for your kids to take a gap year, but
yeah,
maybe buy them the ticket to go somewhere, and then they work there for a bit, and then they have to find their own way from there.
I don't think everyone benefits from a gap year. So my argument is that a gap year is not for everyone.
Yeah.
You know, some people are better off either going straight into a tertiary institution. Some people go straight into working straight after high school.
True. I mean,
I don't think anybody could turn a gap year into something productive. Not everyone, because it's not going to be beneficial for everyone.
Not everyone, but I also agree with the going straight into work after school, because I think you should work and then study, because there's so much you learn from doing physical tasks at work that you don't read in a textbook when at varsity, and they'll never be able to teach you.
What did you do, Ben?
I took about 16 gap years, Gareth. And
Ben worked. He worked in Israel on a kibbutz.
I was a misspent youth, but it's true. Mab says not everyone can benefit from that. But to Michael's point, you pick up things that you might ordinarily not have had, and I think it just gives you a more rounded kind of understanding of where you are in life. If it's just shitty school to shitty degree to job and getting drunk every Wednesday at like the keg and who knows,
yeah,
then you might end up just being 40 fat and just really despondent.
I think it's so difficult. Mubs is spot on here. For some people, it's a good idea. For some people, it's just not a good idea.
Yeah.
Like, if I'd taken a gap year, I don't know that I'd ever have gone to university. I think I would have just escaped into the world, and I don't know that I would have been very good at getting my head back in. Like, there's no way I could go back to university now. No way. It's all good and well, and your parents care about you. They want the best for you. They want to give you the best chance at a successful life. So they think, oh, well, maybe if you do a degree. And again, degrees are not for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, you got to weigh it up. There's so many options these days. It's not like you're living in the 1930s. There are so many things you could do. You could go and learn a trade. You could start your own business. You could go to university. You could go and work for someone. You could go and travel the world and do peace jobs that pay your way around the world. There are people who do that every category that I've just mentioned. There are very happy and successful people in each of those categories. It's all up to the individual. You don't know. And you can't really make a mistake by doing any of them, right? I mean, any of them is probably good experience. It's not like you can screw up so badly in your early 20s that you won't have a semblance of a life afterwards. Hmm? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, spot on.
It's all about how you bounce back from the so-called mistakes.
So how do you break the whole mold that's put on parents that your son has to go straight into varsity so he can go straight into a job so he can start a family and
but
all that?
But that doesn't happen. So the first fallacy is that if you go to university and you get a degree, you'll get a job. That's not true.
Yeah.
We know that. So already that argument's demolished, right?
Well, I mean, we're sitting with an unemployment rate that's the highest it's ever been since, what, 2008?
Yeah, it's definitely on the increase, and it's not getting any better because we're not able to create more jobs. The fact is, like, going to university and getting a degree is not necessarily guaranteed to get you a job.
Yeah.
That's number one. Number two is it's extremely costly to go to university.
Yeah.
It's very expensive. That's why there are things like fees must fall, and people need to be in hostels and all kinds of things because it's very, very expensive to go to university. So maybe your money is wasted. That's what I'm saying. And this whole focus on tertiary education is also as a result of a skills shortage in South Africa. But the skills that might make you money, if that's what you're after, might be things like plumbing, becoming an electrician, becoming a builder or a draftsman. These are not necessarily things you need university for. They're things that you need a trade for.
To become an electrician, don't you have to study something?
Not at university. You have to do apprenticeship and you have to do a trade.
Same for plumbing?
Yeah.
Did not know that.
Yeah. So it's different. You go work for someone, you do your experience. You eventually get certified, but not by a university. I mean, you can go and do electrical engineering, but you're not going to become an electrician.
Yeah,
and that's stupid too because the electrician's probably making more money than the qualified electrical engineering student straight out of university. So it depends. What do you want in life? Do you want lots of money? Do you want lots of life experience? Do you want to have fun? Do you want to prioritize adventure? Do you want to prioritize starting a family. For some people, that's important.
Mm. But at 18, is it really your say, like nowadays in modern society?
Well, you're freer than you've ever been to tell your parents no.
I still find that your parents are making that decision for you because they think they know best, and then they send you to varsity.
It's because you're still living under their roof.
Yeah, they
and as far
rules.
As they're concerned, yeah. their rule is final, if that's the case. Otherwise, you can pack up your bags and go.
I guess from my observation, from like my friends and people I've witnessed, I see they come out of grade 12 matric, and their parents have a say to what they study. They push them to what their parents want them to study, what they term as like maybe accounting, a safe job, something like that, and they end up unhappy at a job they don't like.
Well, look at yesterday's guest, the contortionist, right? She comes from a family of doctors and lawyers, and she ran away to the circus.
She went to the circus. Now, if I had a daughter and she went to the circus, that would be the end of my relationship with my daughter.
But she ran away. Obviously, there must have been something she didn't like. Her parents might have been pushing her to become a doctor or something.
Listen, she says she gets on with her parents now, but I'm sure they had arguments. There's no parent in the world who's going to respond well to their daughter going, I'm going to join the circus. All right, listen, we've got to get to one other news story, and then we've got to get to the sport. But here are a couple of messages that we need to address as well. So Carla says, I took a gap year working on boats and bars and construction in the Caribbean. That's nice, huh? Imagine being there. St. Martin, after 11 months of working my ass off, I could not wait to get to university. It really motivated me to get a tertiary education. Rusty says there are amazing gap year things out there for school leavers. There is a place called A Way to Explore that sends lower income kids to the USA to start working on their moving carnivals. It worked for 2 years. Worked for two of my brothers-in-law. Well, that sounds interesting. And Mfundo says, okay, guys, I know the details are out there, but I'm not sure I understand. I want to save up for my graduation, which is in 3 years' time. I believe I fall under the aggressive portfolio. From here, what can I do? Because I don't have a tax number, etc. I'm starting completely from a clean slate with this. Well, we'll help you, Mfundo. You don't need a tax number. You just need a proof of residence, I think, and an ID.
Mfundo, the nice thing about hashtag invest is once you've registered and you've submitted your FICA documents, somebody actually phones you.
Yeah.
Because there is an option of setting up an appointment where they will meet with you and sit down with you and explain everything to you. So a lot of helpful people there who should be able to get in touch with you.
And Avi wants to know, is Cliffhanger available as an ebook? Yes. Let me give you the details of that quickly because I actually had to write the publisher an email yesterday because I didn't understand. The book is available as an ebook through all e-tailers like Amazon, Apple, Kobo, etc. And on Amazon.com, Cliffhanger is there. So you can go and find it on Amazon.com, which should be your first stop, or Apple or Kobo or any of those. All right. Anything else in the news that we need to know?
Well, just very quickly, all those cabinet ministers who spoke out against President Jacob Zuma can all breathe a sigh of relief because none of their jobs are going to be at risk.
Well, his isn't, so why should theirs?
Well, that's at least according to ANC Secretary General Gwede Mantashe. He was answering questions on whether or not members who questioned the president's fitness to hold office would be recalled or reprimanded for speaking their minds. To which Mantashe responded, our view is that nobody will be treated in a different way because they happened to raise an issue in the NEC meeting. He was adamant that no minister would be questioned about their contribution in the NEC meeting, saying basically that it cannot work that way. And it will not be allowed to happen. Because, you know, Derek Hanekom was the first one over the last weekend who spoke out against the president's fitness to hold office. And then people started, you know, being concerned about his job and what would happen to him and blah, blah, blah. But the Secretary General said, no, everything is fine here. Nobody's going to be suddenly reshuffled to another position or, you know, get pushed out.
Mm.
So we'll wait and see.
Well, it's not like government are doing very much at the moment. There's nothing happening. It's all in stasis. It's all frozen right now. So they're going to go on their holidays. They'll get back to Parliament next year, and maybe the wheels will start turning in February. It's got to be great to be in politics. You don't really have to do anything. There are no deliverables here, and clearly if there were deliverables and our president and the Parliament and the government were measured, they'd come up wanting. But it's nice. They don't get measured. All right, let's get into Ben's sport. It's, we're running on for time here. Ben, what do you have for us this morning?
Well, Gareth, the big story, of course, the massive tragedy of the Brazilian football team whose plane just crashed and they all basically died. So,
but they didn't have to eat each other.
No, well, they were dead. That's the thing when you die, you lose the ability to eat, really. So the Copa Quinça team from Brazil. So just to give an example of this, to kind of bring it to home. Picture Mamelodi... Picture Morocco Swallows, right?
Okay.
Crap team. It used to be somewhere, went all the way down. I don't even know where they are now. They're in the third, fourth division or something like that.
Right.
Imagine them coming up, getting a chance to win the CAF Confederations Cup, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is exactly what this Brazilian team is an example of. They used to be kind of near the top. They went all the way down to the point where these guys were catching the bus to training because none of them could afford cars or anything like that. It's a real fairy tale story. So they were en route to Colombia to play against Colombian team 4 in this final. Basically, it's the second tier of the South American Champions League. And, basically, the 81 people were in the plane and only 6 survivors. So I think there's two left of the team. There's a whole bunch of sports journalists on there, obviously all the coaching staff. So the team's done.
Shame, that's horrible.
But Colombia's Atletico Nacional, which is the team they're going to play, they've actually asked that Copa Quinça get the title, which is a very noble thing.
Well, so it's not going to... They're dead
now. Not change anything, but I mean, sure. They said, you know, the title's got to go to them for this year. It's a hugely, hugely sad story. I know there's been a few incidents of teams going down, and well, they all pass, unfortunately.
I hate to be callous, but the team that lives must get the trophy.
Or they say out of respect for the team.
Yeah, well...
They want the other team to get it.
It's horrible.
Huge sad story, and they were on the way to Medellin, which is where Pablo Escobar made lots of money.
Mm.
You know, it's just, it's so sad to hear these kind of things. And you also kind of wonder, should sports teams all go on the same plane?
Isn't that the cheapest option for them?
Sure.
If they're all on that same plane?
If the plane crashes, you've got no more team.
But also, isn't that better for the team? I mean, what if you're left with half a team and you still have to field the other half? No. They've just gone one plane.
Someone.
So you make a new team. Listen, this is a horrible thing to happen, but airplane disasters happen. It's nobody's fault. These things do occur from time to time, and it's awful for this team, and it's awful for their supporters. But, you know, how is it different to a family all going on the same plane?
Yeah, I guess.
And then the whole family gets wiped out.
Well, the reason I bring it up is that you won't find a lot of big corporates all flying on the same plane. You don't see all the big management people on the same plane. That's how it always works.
Actually, a while ago, that did happen with some guys from Italtile. And a whole lot of their executives were all killed in a small plane crash. So, I don't know. Occasionally, it does happen.
Either way, on to other football news. And Banyana Banyana, which is South Africa's women's football team, their African Cup of Nations has come to an end. They lost in the semi-final to Nigeria. Now, they've done bloody well to get to this point, but the Nigerian women are just too strong for them. They've been a bit of a bug side for them. I think it's the seventh loss. So they went down 1-0, and Cameroon had the better of Ghana going 1-0. So that'll be your final. Cameroon versus Nigeria, and SAL play Ghana in the third and fourth place match. Last night in the PSL, well, Wits are no longer unbeaten. They got put down, They were down 2-0 by SuperSport United, which means that Cape Town City now got top of the log. They managed a 1-1 draw with Kaizer Chiefs. Anyone can get a draw with Kaizer Chiefs nowadays. But what made this kind of frustrating for Cape Town City is they did score a legit goal. The ball did go over the line, but it was not referred because football's a very primitive sport. There's no goal line technology that could be used. You can't refer it as another captain. The ball clearly went over.
And they don't want it to happen, right?
Nah, well, it's just football. I mean, come on, get with the times. 2016. But then Kaizer Chiefs also got a guy sent off. So as much as Cape Town City will be sort of happy with an away draw, there was points on the offering there, but they still go top because, well, SuperSport United beat Wits. Maritzburg United also had a draw last night with Chip United, but tonight we've got IS Cape Town versus Sundowns at 7:30, Baroka FC versus Pirates at 7:30, same time for Golden Arrows versus Polokwane, as well as Highlands Park taking on Bloem Celtic and Free State Stars versus Platinum Stars. There's League Cup action in England at the moment. There's the last eight. And you get to see some real high-profile teams like Leeds and Burnley. Leeds lost 2-0 to Liverpool. A 17-year-old kid scored for Liverpool last night. How about that, hey? Go back to school today. What did you do last night? Scored a goal for Liverpool.
That's quite cool.
That's going to get you something in the car park later.
All right.
Burnley, they drew 1-1 with Newcastle, but then 3-1 on penalties. Newcastle missed three penalties. They didn't deserve to win anything after that. So those two teams are through to the semis. Tonight, we see the bigger teams. Arsenal will take on Southampton, 9:45, and then Man United will take on West Ham again. Those are your League Cup matches for tonight. In cricket news, well, England, they tried so hard to fight back. Well, one guy tried so hard to fight back, young Hamid, and everyone else sort of whittled around him. So India waltzed to victory yesterday by 8 wickets, which means they're now 2-0 up in the 5-test series, 2 matches to play. And the worst news for England is that now Hamid has been the absolute find of the tour. Well, he batted yesterday with a broken pinky, and he's now going to be out for the rest of the series. But at least it showed that some Englishmen can play with some heart. But now it means Alistair Cook gets another opening batsman partner. And I think he's had 10 or 11 now in his career. The horrible story of the child abuse in football. Well, it seems just to keep evolving, this story. And it really is getting quite bad. So yesterday I told you there was a hotline set up for this.
Yeah.
So
children being interfered with, you said.
Yeah, in football circles. This goes back into the 70s, right? So within this hotline being set up, 50 calls, 50 cases basically come forward in the first 2 hours of operation. This goes with police receiving around 250 calls on the same subject at the same time. So there is so many skeletons out there in closets. And former Crewe Alexandra coach Barry Bennell has actually been charged for abusing a young boy between 1981 and 1984. So he's actually been brought to book. So he's the first guy that's kind of really now going to face the charges and face the full wrath of the law. And the chairman of the FA, Greg Clark, says this is one of the biggest crises in the history of football in that area. So as much as those smug darts people might laugh this off, we are touching, this is just the tip at the moment, I think. There are so many different cases that are going to come forward. And it really is one of those things that needs to be stamped out. You know, there's been a massive problem with racism in football across Europe and across other countries. And the fact that there's child abuse, I mean, we've said it for so many times already. It's like the last semi-legal human trafficking organization, this whole football thing. Mm. You know, these young, hopeful kids looking to make money, a lot of them looking to support their families, and they're 14, 15, given these opportunities. And just think of the perils. I mean, all you want to do is maybe make the first team, and your biggest challenge might be scoring a goal or, you know, playing your best. But it's not. There's always other challenges at play. And at least they're kind of being uprooted now. In golf, it's a huge week for golf because there's the Australian PGA. So that's a big start there for the European Tour in that area. But also in the Alfred Dunhill Championship, which will take place at Leopard Creek here in South Africa. But there's also the Hero World Challenge, which is a select 18-man field, and there's Tiger Woods' great return. So with Tiger coming back after 15 months of just basically doing nothing, bear in mind that Tiger recently was at a point where he couldn't just not play golf. He couldn't get out of bed. Like, he physically could not get out of bed. He was just so crooked. Not in a Hillary sense, in an actual physical sense. He just could not walk.
Wow.
So it's a real big deal for him. And he's coming back, and he's really showing all his age. Firstly, he's coming to grips with new technology. So, you know, he's talking about that. He's coming to grips with the fact that walking for 4 days might be a bit too much for him. So he's got these special old man shoes. It's just such a strange turnaround from the Tiger that we all knew and loved and saw in this game to kind of like this older guy now. It's such a strange dynamic, but that'll get back in full swing. So the Hero World Challenge isn't obviously like your normal event. Tiger has won this before many times because it's his event. It's actually his thing. So he invites the people. He's the big host. So that will take place Thursday night from 8:30. You get to see Tiger Woods in action again. From Wednesday, you get to see the Alfred Dunhill Championship Par 3 competition. So very much like the Masters, they've had a huge sort of facility upgrade at Leopard Creek. So you'll have a Par 3 tournament to look forward to. In rugby, the big thing to look out for this weekend will be England versus Australia, but more about that closer to the time.
All right, Ben, thank you very, very much. Let's get into some money with Anthea Gardner. We'll go straight to it. We don't have any time to waste. You want to get her on, Flex?
She worked hard for the money, so hard for it, honey. She worked hard for the money, so you better treat her right.
All right, Anthea, a little bit of a discussion this morning about hashtag invest and some people with some very, very sweet emails that have come through and a couple of questions which we'll get to later on. But first of all, how was the market yesterday?
Good morning, Gareth. Yes, global markets had a nice little boost yesterday from the US GDP number, which was released and surprised to the upside. So in the third quarter of this year, the US economy grew by 3.2%. I mean, so basically all indicators are showing that the U.S. consumer seems to be in a much healthier position. You know that the unemployment rate is well below 5, or consistently, I should say, below 5%. And I think the last thing that they'll probably want to know is this inflation. It's kind of the last indicator before there's absolute confirmation that the U.S. Fed will raise interest rates on the 16th of December. But I would say yesterday's growth numbers pretty much will seal the deal. There is a bit of turmoil at the moment around the OPEC meeting, which is being held later today. Russia saying it won't attend. Saudi saying that they won't cut production unless all the other OPEC members cut production. And we know that both Iran and Iraq have asked for special dispensation. The fact that crude oil is still trading around $57.70 a barrel probably means that they will come to some sort of production cut decision later today. I mean, I can't actually believe how volatile this oil price is. It's almost as bad as the rand. And then our market closed flat to negative, which is a bit disappointing considering we saw the weakness in the rand yesterday, which of course blew out when the ANC's National Executive Committee held their press conference yesterday afternoon. So in the morning, the rand was trading at around 13.71 against the US dollar, weakened very much consistently into the NEC meeting, and then blew out and touched 14.08 during the press briefing.
Oh, wow.
It has subsequently had a bit of a pullback, 13.92 at the moment to the dollar, 14.80 to the euro, and 13.37 to the pound.
Right. So it seems, look, we're still around that level, which is not entirely bad.
No, it's not shocking.
But it's quite clear from the movements of the rand yesterday that the rand doesn't like Jacob Zuma, and Jacob Zuma is bad for the rand.
Oh, absolutely. But you know what I'm really not liking is this breakdown in the relationship between the rand and the stock market. So usually when the rand weakens, it drives the overall JSE higher because, of course, the rand hedge component. But in the last couple of months, we've seen that when investors sell the rand, they tend to sell shares as well. And that's not a fundamental call because obviously the weaker rand for the rand hedge stocks means higher income. But it's a sentiment-based call. We saw industrials had a little bit of a bounce yesterday, but still not enough for a positive close. And it's not just market participants, you know, or I should say it's not just the offshore investors. Yesterday we had the RMBBR business confidence number released. It printed a ridiculously low 38 compared to the previous month's 42. And what this is, this index basically is a survey of close to 3,000 top executives across industries, and a 38 print means that less than 4 out of 10 correspondents were satisfied with business conditions. In other words, we're failing dismally. And I think last week or the week before, you said to me, you know, how can we create jobs because our unemployment rate now above 27% is so high? And I kind of said that we want policy that encourages entrepreneurship, thereby creating jobs. But actually, I think what we need is a change in sentiment. You know, when these CEOs think about the future of their business in this country and they're so negative about it, they're not going to go and build business or expand their business and employ people. You need them to believe that the way forward is a positive one. And, of course, I'm still worried about this tax or possible tax hike in February because I think business people don't want to feel like they're being taxed into Chapter 11. So those, you know, kind of – I mean, what do we do about the big tax hole, the kind of revenue that we need to generate? That's a good question. But maybe raising taxes is not the issue. Maybe give – business is a break, actually.
Yeah, well, try and get a bunch of people who don't know anything but how to take in government. Try to get them to understand that.
Yes, because if they are going to collect taxes, then they need to use that money to provide infrastructure. And in fact, your business is a very good idea, a good example, and I don't want to pick on Cliff Central, but you know, you could be based in Mauritius where the tax rate, the corporate tax rate is 3%, but instead you're here where it's, I don't know, what is it, 32% for corporates? So you want to encourage businesses to be here.
I would love us to be based in Mauritius. My Bali has just said she'd like to go as well.
Yeah. I'm packing my bags as we speak.
That sounds
brilliant.
I mean,
why are we wasting time?
Exactly. Why are we still here?
Check this space next year.
Oh, what have I done?
Yeah, look what you've done.
We can still Skype you from there, Anthony. Don't worry.
Thanks, Tim. All right, but I will still have to visit the office on Monday mornings.
Okay, well, then you're going to cover your own flights. That's all I'm saying. All right.
Oh, you don't give anything away. Okay.
No.
So I know this too will pass, and people are worried about the confidence and the problems, but it really is – it really just shows what happens when you watch the stock market. It feels like – everything is magnified by the move in the rand, you know, share prices, politics, it's all very dramatic.
Okay, so the smart people will tell you you've got to take the long view and that actually this drip, drip, drip erosion of the stock market's value at the moment is just part of a much bigger picture and it's not the end of the world. But it is kind of depressing every time you look at your indicators on your phone and you see just red.
Oh, absolutely. And the value of your share portfolio decreases a little bit every day. It's not great, but we know that this is how it goes. I mean, and also we have asset allocation at our disposal. So we're just talking about shares at the moment, but actually what's happening is that the bond market is yielding the 10-year bond is now 9%. So you can still make your money. You just have to choose which asset class you want to be in.
All right.
And then Japan, pretty much flat to positive this morning. All of Asia really just following the U.S. markets higher. So hopefully we'll see a nice little bounce today.
Very good. Anything else that we need to know about?
No. The Woolworths AGM today. So if you hold one share in one Woolworths share, you are welcome to attend the AGM and vote on whatever's on the agenda. I'm just throwing that in as an aside. So when you start building your portfolio, if Woolworths happens to be one of your shares,
right?
There you go.
So if you're on hashtag invest and you do end up with one full share in a company, you can go and attend an AGM, which might, for some people, especially if they've got nothing to do all day, give them something to do. So there are
absolutely
all kinds of benefits.
The other thing, of course, if there is a big issue on the table and you want to vote and you don't want to attend, you could, of course, give me your proxy and I'll send somebody to the AGM to vote on your behalf.
Well, that's excellent. Now, Ashley says, my grandfather started investing in his 20s with 5,000 rand and he turned it into millions. A real inspiration. There are stories like that, right?
Oh, absolutely, yes. And it is what it is all about, you know, starting early, being in the market, not withdrawing, just compounding your returns, yes. I mean, at some stage, of course, you want to spend it, but you have to be in it kind of to grow the portfolio first.
And there were some other questions. I don't think we've got any time to deal with them now. But for people who want more information, what's the best way to get all the info you need about hashtag invest?
All the portfolio information is on your website, cliffcentral.com, on the Money Shot page, or on cartesian.co.za. There's a hashtag invest tab. Or you can just email me, invest@cartesian.co.za.
Right. There we go. Three ways for you to check on all the information so you can get in and start investing today. I mean, what better time is there than the present? It is all about when you get in terms of early start and keeping it in for as long as possible. It's not about waiting and waiting and waiting. Right, Anthea?
That's right.
Okay.
Thank you, Gareth.
Get going. There we go. Thanks, Anthea. Very good. Anthea Gardner, a look at the markets. It is 8 minutes after 7. Good morning, everybody. It's Wednesday morning. It's the last day of November.
Yes.
Did you realize that? Holy hell, it's the last day of the month.
Hooray.
That crept on me. That crawled upon you like Christopher Reeve. Isn't that how the Eminem song goes?
Yes.
Yes.
Does your education have 20/20 vision? Apply at Vega for a world-class BA or BCom degree from an internationally accredited institution, and in 2020 you'll be ready to take the world by storm. Vega is the only school in South Africa focused upon the fast-paced, high-stakes field of branding, one of the most powerful and exciting global industries. Vega is a brand of the Independent Institute of Education and is South Africa's premier school of brand, design, and business. Visit vegaschool.com.
The Four Punch Convoy year-end finale to the Rusty Summer Fiesta this Saturday, December 3rd at Olympia Stadium in Rustenburg. The most expensive convoy in history.
shutting down 2016. Register now. Get your double VIP ticket, your four-punch jumpsuit, and a bottle of VSOP called Vassier. All at 2,000 rand. Make sure you're part of the most expensive convoy in Africa. Brought to you by the largest HD radio station in Africa, Touch Central. Touch Convoy, Courvoisier, and Rusty Summer Fiesta. Saturday, December 3rd, Olympia Stadium. Register right now. You heard? Bring your four pipes only. No two, no three. Four pipes only, baby. That's right. Yeah!
CliffCentral.com.